You're listening to The Kylo Show, the podcast where we talk about how to keep your love on no matter what and why whole healthy families are going to save the world. And it starts right now.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to The Kylo Show. We are still working on our Kylo at Work series, but we have another really fun guest.
Ta-da.
I'm so excited. This is like my Uncle Bob. I'm going to share with you.
This is your Uncle Bob.
This is my Uncle Bob.
The best friend a guy could have. Bob Hassan from Hassan Inc. and BobHassan.com. And yep. I don't know what other author.
He's famous. Got a few books.
Yeah, he's
got three, right? Is there three books out?
He's got three books out. He's got podcast with Sean Bowles that's storming the planet.
No.
He's got, I don't know. What do they call you at Jesus Culture San Diego?
I don't know what they call me, but I got Lauren. That's all that matters.
Oh, that'll do it. Lauren Hassan. There is a whole nother story. We'll have to get her on here.
Basically, they are a dynamic duo, those two. They are
fantastic.
Advancing the kingdom and loving people well. But so I'm just excited.
This is the Bob Hassan that he and I co-authored The Business of Honor back a few years ago. And really, that book captures a lot of the essence of what we're talking about today. Really, how do you integrate the ingredients of leading like our Father and not like a tyrant, or in that book we call it an orphan heart, orphan spirit. So this is, you know, really the interview that we never had about the business of honor in lots of ways. Since then, Bob wrote a book for young people called Shortcuts, which is a book every young entrepreneur for sure should get a hold of. They should be passing that book out in every school of ministry and every college in the world, just to help people kind of pick up on the idea of what's it actually mean to get to your goal in life.
Yeah.
So here we are.
Well, please tell us, Bob, what is it that you do and what makes you so wonderful? Because we could just keep going on and on.
I know. I get to talk about it all.
You've
got
to tell the people how amazing you are.
Well, I just want to say I'm so honored to be here with you guys, and I love The Kylo Show, and Keep Your Love On was formational in my life, putting words to who I am, and I'm so happy to be here, Brittany.
It's a lot of fun to have you. Again, I just am excited about all the fun people that we've been having on the podcast lately, because they're all like Our people. They're just so wonderful. You're also on the board with us, which is a lifesaver. We had Eric Knopf last week. He was on the board as well. So, but please tell these curious people, what is it that you do? What's your company? How is it that you're advancing the kingdom in what you do?
Well, I'm advancing the kingdom by being bent towards the Father in everything that I do, whether it's at work or whether it's at church or whether it's at home. Trying to let the Lord come through me so that I can create a culture of love rather than fear. And I have a company that I've had for 45 years. It's a painting contractor, and we're a mature company now. And like Danny said, he tricked me into writing a book in 2009.
Yes, he did.
Which was amazing. And then I got to travel with you guys for a long time, and it's been really amazing. So I'm just thrilled to be where I'm at, and humbled that, you know, God had, in later in my life, has taken me in a little bit different direction with books and podcasts and things like that.
Super fun. So when you say painting contractor,
mature, I like the word mature,
you know, that's a good way to introduce it. But you basically are surrounded by construction workers, right?
Yeah.
Which would mean you're like the king of the construction workers, right?
I don't know. No, painters are not the kings. As a matter of fact, There's a bleep painters is what we are. So yeah. The lowest of the low, probably the smallest subcontractor on every job site that we do. And, but we make the jobs look good when they're finished. So they need us.
So essentially you've painted San Diego, right?
Some of it. We've been lucky.
He started from the top of the works way down to the border.
I remember back in the day, Danny, you remember Thomas Brother Maps? Well,
yes.
Thomas Brother Map, and you'd go like downtown San Diego to 501 B Street, and you'd get on the elevator to the 31st floor, and you'd go into suite 301, and they'd point you to a little room, and they'd say, paint that room. So you paint the room and be happy and get paid a little bit of money and go on. And now, you know, our jobs, I can drive down the freeway and say, oh, you see that building and that building and that building. We've painted those buildings. And so yeah. It's changed a lot in over 40 years.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. I got a tour of one of your recent projects, the SoFi Stadium where the Rams and the Chargers play now. That was a pretty cool project. No small task.
Lincoln has a hard hat that says Hassan Inc. in his closet from that.
I can see it. I can see it in the background there on his shelf.
Yeah. In our church world, we talk about the healthy fear of God. And we're trying to, fix our father wounds and have a healthy fear of God. Well, that job, boy, I had a healthy fear of that job. It was a monster, and for almost 5 years. And when we finished that, I was really, really pleased. It was a feather in our cap.
A 5-year painting job.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. As you do. Right. So cool. Well, Bob, you in a mature 45-year stretch, I mean, you've seen it all. I mean, you've seen it all. You've done it all. And let's talk just a little bit about how you are purposefully shaping the culture of your company to bring out the best in people, to build strong relationships so that you can, you can put a productive demand on relationships and they don't shred, they're not fragile. And just talk a little bit about, kind of how you lead in creating a culture so that your leaders then in fact push it down into the company.
Danny, that's a great question. And that pretty much is the hardest thing about building culture. And there's, all kinds of books written about leadership and how to bring culture. And I learned from you, 1 John 4:18, fear and love can't coexist because fear has to do with punishment. And so I think in lots and lots of companies, you'll see a fear-based mentality where people are climbing over other people's backs, people are stealing other people's ideas. People are trying to make other people look stupid. And in those fear-based cultures, it's really, really hard to have, a culture of love. So in my company, I've made, a real effort to lead with the why, to tell people why we're doing what we're doing and allow people to collaborate to make decisions. Obviously, when you're a director or you're a supervisor, you're a direct report, you're a CEO, you're the boss, you have the ultimate authority and make the ultimate decisions. But in my company, I've really, really tried to allow the people at the table to come to consensus. So what we do is, we sit around the table and we bat around these ideas and issues and problems that we have within the company. And everybody has a say. I want to hire powerful people to come to sit around the table. When I've hired someone, I expect them to bring their best and to bring their opinions. And part of having the ability to give your opinion is not to have fear that somebody's going to say, that's a stupid idea, or we've never done that. The one I love the most is, we've never done that, so therefore that's stupid. Genuinely, in my career, when people have new ideas that we've never done, they've worked and shaped and changed policy. So So it's been this whole march through my career to explain the why we're doing things, which starts with a strategic business plan, a vision, mission, and values, so people know, you know, what the company's about, so that as it pushes down past the office into the field, past the superintendents, to the foreman, to the laborers and apprentices, they all kind of understand what the company's about. And having good lead people who understand what the culture is about allows that to be able to be pushed down. And in the construction business, is rough and tumble. So when you have a culture that's based on love, it's a little bit different. And people,
yeah, <It's> a little bit. Yeah, Ben worked at a lumber yard and in construction for years, and I think somebody once referenced the lumber yard that he was working at. It was the scum of the earth is where you're going to be working, is with those people, which is a horrible way of saying it, but it. A lot of the guys that work there are on parole. They've had hard lives. And so this concept of, decreasing the fear, which is probably what they've known the loudest, and increasing love and value is a really foreign concept.
Yeah.
So how do you translate that to your leaders that are, you know, leading these guys that are, you know, I don't know what your employees are like, but I just know that the average guy that Ben ever worked with was, he had an interesting background. We'll say it that way. So, I mean, you've transformed this and left a mark on probably almost everyone that comes through your company, that you have a high value for decreasing that fear.
Yeah. And all the way down to people that I've never met who work for the company, hopefully it's pushed down. We have a robust org chart. And so, you know, our teams have leaders, and so each team lead, you know, has to understand that. Brittany, that's a great question. I mean, we have people who have, you know, been on parole, have been in jail, people who have come out of halfway houses. As a matter of fact, our government has mandates that that we hire at-risk people. So we're bringing at-risk people in. But I've been doing that for decades, bringing at-risk people in. The only way I know how to do it is to be consistent. And your question reminds me of a story. I had a rock star superintendent who has worked for the company for over a decade. And he's a rough and tumble guy. I mean, he's, you can imagine, he gets his work done. He's a GSD-er. But I had hired... I had hired someone from the church who had been down and out, who needed a job, and I'd put him on one of our jobs, and he wasn't very good. He didn't know what he was doing. But he needed help. And I told my superintendent, listen, I'm going to bring this guy in. He doesn't know anything. We're going to pay him this much because we need to, because he has a family. And I just want you to work with him. And he kind of gritted his teeth, and he did not get along well with this guy. And so
that's rough.
it was rough. But I trusted my superintendent because he's amazing with the clients. I call him an ambassador for our company. Mm-hmm. And one evening I got a phone call from this friend I hired, and he said, I'm really, really sorry. That I'm such a terrible worker. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he said, well, I got fired today. And, the superintendent told me I was a piece of crap, and he was firing me. And I said, oh, okay. So come to find out. So the next day we were in an operations meeting, and the superintendent was at our operations meeting. And I asked him, I said, hey, do you like working for us? And he said, yeah, boss. I mean, this is the best company. I want to retire here. You've changed my life. I mean, you've given me an opportunity, and I want to work here forever. I've never worked for a better company, blah, 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 blah. And I said, that's awesome. Have I ever, like, have I ever, you know, treated you poorly? No, you haven't. And I said, all right, well, I heard from this worker and I just want to know who gave you permission to berate this worker and fire him by telling him he was a piece of crap. And dead silence. Everybody around the, you know, everybody around the conference room table was silent. They didn't know I was going to do this. And I said, he didn't know what to say. And I said, so what I want you to do before the day is out is I want you to call not only that guy, but everybody else you laid off and apologize to them. And he said, well, they don't work for me anymore. And I said, you still have their phone number. And I want to hear from you at the end of the day that you've done that. And man, he did it. And then he came back and said, I really thought about this. And I've never been treated this way. And I guess it's just my old nature in the construction business and I'll never do it again. And I said, perfect. And I called my friend back and said, hey, did this guy call you? Yeah, he apologized. I don't know what you said to him. And I said, I just said, look, I want people to be treated the way everybody wants to be treated. And that's how we're going to run this company. And you're not a piece of crap. You were part of a layoff. That's the other thing that he was part of a layoff. I think we laid off 15 people that day. And so I think having, you know, and keep your love on connection, communication, and boundaries, right? So I practice my business through those three principles and keep your love on. And that particular one was communication and boundaries. And I really believe in that in the workforce.
And, you know, the beautiful thing is that you have powerful people mm-hmm. who literally expect to be personally responsible for their actions. Mm-hmm. And they expect to, whether they realize it or not, they expect to be held accountable. Mm-hmm. And so many of us are in environments where the lane that I pay you for to produce by the date that it was supposed to be done is what you think you're accountable to. And when you empower powerful people, they begin to realize that I'm actually accountable for the experience that the people around me have mm-hmm. of my production. And I think that is so vital. And it's such a challenge to do in an environment where a lot of guys just settle their disagreements with punches, you know, mm-hmm. like, hey, we'll just sort this out out there in that field. You know, you ever say anything like that to me again, you know, the strong survive, survival of the fittest kind of an environment. And you're integrating into that respect and responsibility. Yeah. Fantastic.
How many employees do you have?
It ranges from 800 to 50. Yeah. And right now we're in a low season right now, which is great because we're collecting all of our accounts receivable and getting ready for jobs. But the thing, you know, going back to this, like the employee base is whether you manufacture widgets, whether you're in a nonprofit, whether you are a service company providing a service, the one thing as believers that we have to recognize is we are all a service company. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've seen since the pandemic has been as people work from home, they've lost this culture. And in the national workforce, we started seeing articles about quiet quitting. And, you know, what's a quiet quitter? What the heck is that? Nobody knew. Well, it was employees who said, listen, I'm not going to do anything extra. I'm going to show up for work. I'm going to do the bare minimum.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do any extracurricular activities with coworkers. I'm not going to have any continuing education. I'm just going to do the bare minimum. And so Wall Street Journal had all these articles about it, which morphed into Once all these people weren't working, employers were trying to hire people. So this other phenomenon happened last year where people would interview for jobs, get the job, and then not show up for jobs. Wow. And employers nationwide, industry-wide, were writing about this phenomenon of this happening. And I was perplexed by it because, you know, what's happening? Were they getting better jobs? Are people's character in the place where not only are they quiet quitting, but now they're ghosting these jobs? And so one of the things I like to talk about is the bar is very low for us as believers to show up and to have really, really good experiences in our jobs. If you show up early, if you complete your tasks during the day, if you ask another coworker or your supervisor, you know, what can I do next or how can I help you? You are in the 1%. And it's
so sad
to say it, but having people show up and move up, and I know plenty of young people who are just moving up in their jobs right now because they're letting their character show through, they're keeping their love on at work, they're mm-hmm. being powerful when they show up, and we're in a place today where last week in the news, 70,000 tech jobs were laid off between Amazon, Google, Facebook, Twitter, and people are getting laid off. And who do you think's getting laid off? Do you think the people with character that are showing up on time are getting laid off? Yeah. No, the quiet mm-hmm. quitters, the people mm-hmm. that are posting the jobs are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The people that are jacking up the anxiety around them mm-hmm. are the people that are being scrubbed out. You know, yeah. This is a great time to, economically, it's a great time to scrub the problems from your teams and say, you know, this is a great excuse to let all of you who seem to have learned high levels of disrespect and self-absorption, mm-hmm. it's this a good time to just let you go out there and figure a few things out. And the people that are coming in that are wanting to take responsibility, they're wanting to influence the culture that the leader wants to perpetuate, not just their own particular culture. Like so many people in recent years have come in with an agenda to change the culture of the company that they're a part of and become the culture catalyst of that company. And employers are going, what's happening to our company? What is the deal?
Yeah.
Like, well, this is a great time to get the reins back to your company and to tighten up on that central piece. Bob, you've told me a number of times that your top tier supervisors and leaders have been with you for decades. Is that aging out now, or is that picking up speed? How would you describe that hot lava core?
I've had a couple people retire last year, but decades. I have a young man who came out of college, and he is now 36. So he's
so young. So young. We should just talk about that.
Well, all I'm saying is it's impressive when somebody's been with you for 15 years and they're 36.
Yeah.
And he loves the culture because he's an artist, he's a photographer, he loves the woodwork, he has all these outside interests. And our working at our company, you work, you know, basically 6 a.m. to 3 p.m., gives him the whole rest of the day to pursue these other outside interests that I'm so excited for him about, because I believe, you know, later in his life, he, you know, his art and photography will take off to a point where that's what he'll be doing. And mm-hmm. it's so incredible to be able to provide an environment and a culture for people to raise their quality of lives and let them explore their outside interests.
Yeah. And Bob, you know, you have a posture of, you know, not in a weird way, but in a very healthy way, of being a father to these men, that, you know, you see them coming, you begin to position them in the company for success. Talk a little bit about that. I just know a couple guys that aren't with you anymore because they went on to, you know, their dreams or their true calling. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've got, you know, I had some really cool young people, some really cool stories about, you know, this young man was in the Naval Academy and in the Navy, and he was a pastor and then a teacher. And of course, you know, the pastor and the teacher, you know, and the youth pastor, he got abused. So I brought him into the construction company, this smart guy, and let him just be smart until he could let all the dust settle from the spiritual abuse from the churches, you know, at large, and figured out that, you know, he really wanted to be a college professor. So now he's in Scotland, getting his PhD in theology.
How long did he work for you?
2 years.
Okay.
And he put, you know, 2 hard years into it. I had another young man who was a wrestler at a college, and he, you know, all he wanted to do in his life is kill terrorists. And so he came to work for us. Luckily, he didn't kill anybody. Now he's an Army Ranger, and he's going into military intelligence. And so we were this kind of stopping ground for people on their way to what their future is. And one of the things is when you hire people, you have to invest a lot of money into time and training. Mm-hmm. But what I've realized is it's worth it even if they're going to leave, because it teaches you about where you as a company need to go. And so it's so cool. And there's countless guys who started their own small painting businesses who are out there. And I, you know, I'm really proud about that, seeing people follow their calling, because I think passion is an interesting word. I hear people a lot talk about how they're not passionate about their jobs, or their company is corporate, or they don't have social justice causes. But I think if people have passion projects, you know, you have another half a day after work that you can work on those passion projects. So you don't really have to be super passionate about, you know, manufacturing a widget or being in a service company. You have all this other time to follow, to see where you really want to go. And I've seen lots and lots of young people do that. And it's really exciting.
I do. I have a practical question, because I love the practical things. So if you've got a company that ranges from 800 to 50 people, roughly, and right now it's in the sweet season, so that's great for you. Love that. How do you develop, like, what do you do to develop your leadership team? So when you have such a large, you know, increase of employees, that you're maintaining your culture, like, what are the practical things that you're doing with your leadership that helps your, you know, your values and your really integrity extend past this, you know, 50 people to 800? Like, what do you do to develop your leaders?
Well, I think, you know, the 50 people, just classify them as the cream of the crop and the leaders. Mm-hmm. And so they've been, you know, a lot of these guys have been with me for 30 years. So, mm-hmm. So over time, by osmosis, they're getting the culture. Mm-hmm. When You don't have to have you know, a master class when someone calls you and says, my transmission broke, you know, or my wife's pregnant and I don't have insurance, or my mother's dying and, you know, I need a plane ticket, and the company says, oh, we'll take care of this. Mm-hmm. We'll give you a loan off your future salary. We'll give you the money. Or when someone says, my daughter is having a crisis, and the first response is, go take care of your family. Mm. These are the things in the culture that aren't taught. It's just how we believe. And so through people being there decades and seeing this kind of thing happen, seeing someone make a massive mistake, which is a mistake, and not getting fired, because a mistake's a mistake. You know, there's willful things that, you know, we don't put up with, but people make mistakes that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes. And it's like, okay, what did we learn from this? And we're going to move forward. Of course, in the office, we're shaking our heads like, are you serious? But the culture that's built is, you know, I've made more mistakes than anyone. So who am I to judge when someone out in the workforce who's trying their best makes a mistake? And it's a good question, Britt, because I think people want, you know, I have an e-course that all my employees have to watch. and we don't do that. It's more like we're very, very intentional. And the only courses they have to do are human resources related, because, you know, the state mandates it. But within the culture of the company, I think, like, I love, Britt, what you do with your family. You have a culture creed. Your kids all know what being a SERPL is and what the culture creed is and what they're meant to do, and they go do it. And even when they make mistakes, you sit down with them and say, hey, this doesn't fit with our culture creed, and we move forward. And so that's what I try to do at work. The difference between work and a family is, you know, if people get three warnings, they've been written up. If some things seem willful or some things are against the law, they're done and gone. And and that's a hard thing as a believer to get used to. And I know lots of people who run companies really have a hard time. I like to say, you know, one of the things is we're too quick to hire, which means that we don't check references, and then we're too slow to fire. When we know that somebody is crossing boundaries, isn't accountable, isn't powerful, you know, we need to, you know, make those decisions. And if you're an employee, show up and be powerful, be accountable, crave boundaries, ask a lot of questions, and ask for feedback.
That's great. I love it.
Awesome. And so guys that have been with you for 30 years, when they leave your organization, I mean, I've seen some pretty special touches that you've given to some of your guys. I've never heard of a company doing some of the things that you've done. But do you want to talk about any of that? Like, is that something you can talk about, or
talk about it in generalities?
Okay.
We have done some really amazing things for people because I believe that they've done pretty amazing things for me. I don't think the company would be where it's at without these long-term employees. And so I have done things that, like you say, companies don't normally do. Recently, a man retired, and he'd been with me for over 20 years. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to pay you a year of severance. And I'd only had two or three people retire before. So what do I know? And I was at a business forum talking about it. And this guy raised his hand and said, do you know that when people retire, you don't pay severance? And I thought about it for a second. I said, well, I did. This man transformed the company over 20 years, and
yeah,
it was just the right thing to do. And so I know that there's rules, and I know that, you know, you do these certain things, and you have a human resources manual that say these different things, but you have the ability as an employer to do things that and recognize people for long years of service. And it's just such a blessing to be able to do it, because if you think about it, these people have blessed you by being faithful, by being in long years of service, and by actually looking at the company like it was their own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do you think that type of ownership or responsibility, how did that soak in to them? Because obviously they're making a salary, they're making a paycheck, and they're not, you know, they're not the primary profiteer, if you will. You know, they're on salary, and yet these guys over decades are taking such good care of your company that they're transforming it. How does that happen?
Well, again, the discussion we've had about culture, but I'm not a micromanager. So when I hire people that I think are going to be learners, who are going to be able to shift and adjust, and who are powerful and who are smarter than me. So that when we come around the table, I've put people in these positions because I believe in them. And I think it takes people a long time to recognize that you believe in them, because they always think the other shoe's going to drop. Yeah. And they think that if they make one mistake, they're gone. And in a lot of companies, it is that way. But it takes a long time for people to recognize that you believe the best in them. And even when they do make mistakes. And so I think once that pushes down in a person's soul and they realize they've been believed in, it makes them want to take care of what we've built as a team. And we've built a pretty special thing so that people want to protect it.
Yeah. And I mean, I know it's a weird thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway.
But shocking. I know. So
I think
shocking.
I think your guys love you. I think they love you. I think that, you've built this family thing where we are committed to each other. We are in this for the long haul. I don't know anybody that feels as protected by another human being as the guys you would work with feel protected by you. Like, you are going to the bank. You're going to the wall. You are going to get us through this somehow. And your success is our success. And so these people are, the way they feel so believed in is because I think your leadership is, self-sacrificing at some level, where you really are devoted to the well-being of your troops. And I think these guys just love you.
I think the people who've been there long term, but you know what? There's a handful of people over here who, if you interviewed him, they'd say that Bob's the biggest dirty rotten rat. He fired he didn't do this, that, and the other thing. And there's, when you say that, it's all I think about is the people over here who think I'm a dirty rotten rat. And I think that's just human nature. But conversely, where I will protect, the people out in the field, they protect me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the craziest thing when, I get a call from a guy who's so fired up, and this, they're trying to do this and this and this to the company, and we're not going to let them. And they're like, whoa, calm down. This is one of our good clients, and we've been in business with these guys for 30 years, and but they're not going to get over on us on this one. And they're trying, you're like, okay. And it's a beautiful thing, but I think part of the thing is as an employer or as a shift manager or as someone who has direct reports, if you don't recognize the value that employees bring to you and what they bring to your company, and the success of your company is for the people all the way down the line, mm-hmm. then you're not a level five leader, as Jim Collins would say it. And level five leaders look in the mirror when there's problems, and they look out at everyone else when there's success. Mm-hmm. And I think, as we keep our love on in the workplace, as we're doing Kylo at work, these are the foundational principles of a leader that we need to be, is to look out to the interests of others, as the scripture says.
Yeah,
that's great. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where everyone can go to find resources that you have available? I just think of everyone that's got a small company to a large company that thinks, man, I want to have a culture like Bob Hassan has in his company. How would they find those resources? What would you suggest them out of the resources that you have? Where would you have them start? Give a plug for us here.
Okay, BobHassan.com has all the resources, the books, but you can go to LovingOnPurpose.com too, because Business of Honor's for sale there. Danny and I wrote a book about culture in business, and it has the culture of honor principles, the keep your love on principles in it. But BobHassan.com, you can find that kind of stuff. There's blogs and there's links to the podcast and things like that. Brittany, thanks for asking.
Yeah, I think you could be a great mentor for a lot of people that are looking for mature help, as you so said earlier, that you've got a mature company. You're a wealth of knowledge. You're our first phone call when we like, we need Bob. We need Bob to help us, as I don't understand this. And I don't know how many times we've called you with, can you help me understand this? I don't speak this language. I don't understand.
I think Christian calls his phone calls with Bob Hassan's Institute of Financial.
Yeah, you're his college that he's going to right now. He's in training.
Totally.
It's awesome because he wants to learn, and he's one of those learners that it's really awesome. I have something in my inbox from you guys, that a contract to review. So I can't wait to see. See it, and I'm going to make sure that you're protected too.
Yeah, of course.
I think one of the things that I would encourage people is find people in your church and your local body that have experience in what you need mentorship with, and ask them to coffee, ask them to breakfast. The reason I say coffee or breakfast, because it's cheaper than asking them to dinner.
Sit from the finance guy.
Yeah. Well, and take them to coffee and get to know them and tell them, you know, what you're looking for, because people who have experience and are older really, really do want to help. And you have a wealth of knowledge in your faith communities and your churches, everywhere that you are, to find mentorship like that.
Yeah. Find some gray hairs. Find some gray hairs and listen to them. You know, I think that sometimes young people want to share their ideas and their vision and all their untried, philosophies theories. And ideals, and the gray hairs just sit there and nod and wait for a question and
wait for the invitation.
Like, yeah, this would be a great time to just listen, ask a couple questions, and take notes.
Yeah,
yeah, which is what Shortcuts is really, is it's something that is really going to push a young heart that's being molded into what to value and what to shed, because there's just so much garbage that you pick up in the culture around, you know, things that you should get, and things that, you know, somebody else should provide, and something else other people should do. You're like, well, you get sidetracked on that stuff, and you're going to spend a lot of time wasting time. But if you put your head down and go after the right things, you're going to look up and be in a beautiful place.
And there are no shortcuts.
Don't tell them the end of the book, honey.
Well, his cover, it pretty much says, no, there are no shortcuts. It's very clever.
It's true.
Yeah. So
people don't have to read it because there aren't any. But I'll give you, you don't have to read the book. The only shortcut is wisdom. That's the only shortcut. Mm-hmm. And you find that from the Lord, you find that from other people in your life, and you find that from what God gives to you, and it's pretty exciting.
Thank you, Bob, so much.
Thanks
for your
so
time,
much.
Your wisdom, and just thanks for doing such a great job all around you. Mm-hmm. We certainly get to benefit from that. Really appreciate you.
We are grateful. Well, thanks everybody for joining us for another Kylo at Work episode. And thank you, Bob, again for joining us. You're a gift to us in so many ways. And we will see everybody next time on The Kylo Show.
Thanks for listening. Never miss an episode of The Kylo Show by subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch us on the Loving on Purpose YouTube channel. Don't forget to submit your questions and testimonies to thekyloshow.com. The Kylo Show is produced by Ali Armading, co-produced by Ashley Beck and Anna Hill, sound engineer and edited by Taylor Silk, and show promoter Christian Zamora. Don't forget, whole healthy families, gonna save the world.